This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up and down these Michigan roads, yeah.
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Baby, I'm home.
Well, thank you so much, Parker. I'm Jim Irvin, and this is Time Signatures. Today, I'm truly honored to tell you that my guest is part of the next generation of the blues. Perhaps the best way to describe what I feel when I hear him play is phrased best by a former guest of mine, Mr. Earl Thomas. Quote, "When I hear him play and sing, I hear the voices of the ancestors," end quote. Now, not everyone takes hold of these old school blues, but some do, and it just fits like a finely tailored suit. And that's what I see and feel when I hear this young man play. His story began forming and breaking within the blues world not long ago, and since then he has appeared on stages in Chicago, the King Biscuit Blues Festival in Helena, both of Morgan Freeman's Ground Zero locations in Mississippi, and Red's Juke Joint in Clarksdale. Now, since that was written on his About page, he just recently added a trip to Norway to appear at Notodden for the Blues Festival over there as well. 18-year-old Vicksburg, Mississippi native, Harold Young Rel Davenport. Wow, man, what an honor, and welcome to Time Signatures. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Wonderful. I am very pleased to have you here. And Rel, we have to start somewhere, and it only makes sense to ask you where you got your passion for the blues genre, and specifically the old school blues.
Well, for me, it's just something that I felt. But I mean, I started with James Brown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to be a James Brown impersonator. Like when I was
really
8 9, yeah, I was tearing it up, man.
And got the dance moves and everything, huh?
Dance move, jumpsuit. All the thing I didn't have was the hair, but I come across a Jimmy Reed video on YouTube one day.
Okay.
And I was like, wow, it just really hit me, and I was like, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to do, and so I'm like, Mom, will you buy me a guitar? So we go to this pawn shop, and I pick up one of the most expensive guitars in there. I think it was in between $500 and $1,000.
Okay.
Didn't have the money, and so she was like, "I can't get this." And so the owner was listening, and so he was like, "Well, what I can do is I'll let you make payments monthly, and then he can take the guitar." And
wow.
He never finished those payments because eventually he just let me have it. But that's how I got started with guitar. And then I went and bought a harmonica from the dollar store thinking that it was a real harp. So I learned to do a Jimmy Reed shuffle and how to play, I think it was You Don't Have to Go. And then I bought a rack and put them both together. That's the only thing I knew for maybe 6 years.
Wow. Now, how old were you when you picked up the guitar?
I was 7 1/2 when I picked up guitar.
Wow.
I was like 7 when I picked up harp. So I picked up harp first. So I kind of
told
it backwards. But
now, you seem at least to me to be highly dedicated to those old school blues. What made you decide on that particular branch, if you would, of a genre that really does encompass a wide variety of musical flavors?
For me, it was a sound. It was a story. You know, even mm-hmm. with the guys who play the blues now, you just don't get that feeling that you got from those guys who were in the fields, who were going through what they were going through in that time. It was a very dark time, you know.
Yes, sir.
And which is still happening now in a different way, but you don't get the same feeling because, you know, we can't go through what those guys went through.
Right.
And so that was what did it for me.
So at what age did you decide that the life of a blues musician would be in the cards for you?
11, 12.
Okay. And is what I'm reading correct? You practice 8 hours a day?
I did. Yeah. That's what I started doing. Now I'm down to like 6 because I get so busy or I get real tired from traveling, you know, and stuff.
Sure.
I can't do it as much as I want to, but yeah, 8 was what was going on until about a year ago.
Wow, that's incredible. Now, I have to talk to you about that first gig in Chicago. 165,000 views, 4,000 shares. You'd think that people were kind of excited about your music, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I
And
mean,
how did that feel to, I mean, to rise to that level, okay? Because I've had videos that have gotten as much as 15,000 views. That's nothing. 165,000 is incredible.
well, before that gig, I'll say this. I had a video that said 99,000 likes, not views,
Wow.
likes. And so that was before then. So when I did that gig in Chicago at the Logan Center, I wasn't expecting that. I wasn't expecting anybody to be recording, you know, on fa like a Facebook Live. And so it wasn't on my mind. But then when I saw it, I was like, wow. And when the phone started ringing, I was like, wow, this might have just changed my life.
You know, that's cool that you recognize that because a lot of people would just be going, oh man, I got a hundred some thousand, whatever, you know, and it wouldn't land with them and resonate and make them realize that something was happening. But clearly you have a forward way of thinking about this. So I think it's cool because I learned about you through a gentleman down in Queensland, Australia, that's actually playing some of your music down there. And I say, man, I gotta check into this guy. And then I find out that you're in Chicago. But not only that, you have since landed an incredible manager as well, haven't you?
Well, we did that. That was the first gig. After that first gig in Chicago, which it wasn't my first gig, but it was my first gig in Chicago.
Yes, sir.
But yeah, that was after that he became my manager a few
Go
months
ahead
after.
and talk about Matt a little bit.
Well, so to get into Matt, I gotta get into the other guy. And so
Okay.
I had another manager who Matt talked to book me at that gig at the Logan Center. Because Matt is the curator for the Logan Center for the Arts in Chicago. And we come to find out that guy was doing some slick stuff. And I had only had 3 gigs in the past 3 years with that guy. So it wasn't going so well. And so when Matt booked me at the Logan Center, we kind of had to fire that guy because some stuff went on. He didn't want my mom to go with me. So he told them that they couldn't get her a ticket and all this other stuff. And so Matt and the lady who worked with him there kind of saved us from that. And so once that video went viral, the phone started ringing. We were handling some gigs on our own, but then it
Wow.
was kind of hard. And so I called Billy Branch, and I was like, well, I need some help. And then he's like, well, talk to Matthew, because Billy's real busy. He's like, Matthew could help you, and if you needed us for anything, we'll help you too. But Matthew can, and so. We talked to Matthew and I was like, well, I need some help. I'm getting these calls. I started sending people to him, and he wasn't really my manager. He was just helping at that point.
Sure.
And so eventually it was like, well, you should be my manager. And Matthew had his whole he's got his own career going. And so he was like, well, I'll think about it. So eventually he's like, well, if you go to college, I'll be your manager. And so I'm not in college yet, but I plan on going next year. But that's how it started. We worked everything out and whatnot, your regular stuff. And it's been going on since then, about 2 years, I think.
That's fantastic. And I have to tell you, I am still learning because I've only been involved in the blues deeply over the last probably 4 or 5 years. I didn't realize who Matthew Scholer was. He sent me a message about you, and I said, "Hey, Matt, I got to ask you, do you represent anybody else?" And he sent me a link to his page. And then he started telling me who he played with, you know, Big Daddy Kinsey and the Kinsey Report, and I'm like, oh man. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, you really got fortunate, man. You landed with some good people.
We landed with each other
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
because we in a way we needed each other, and that was, I think, as a godsend. So I
Yes,
was
absolutely. And you know, I'm sitting here and you were talking about Billy, and that's a great segue into my next question here. Chicago blues man and one of the most sought after session harmonicist in Chicago, Billy Branch, had this to say about you. In my 46 years of teaching blues in the schools, never have I encountered anyone as young as Harold Davenport with such a laser-focused drive and ability to play the blues as it was played in the bygone golden era of the masters. That is some incredibly high praise, Raul. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's Billy, man. So I can't argue with it. I can't turn it down. You know, I love Billy. You know, that means a lot. You know, when
yes,
I found out that he wrote that about me, said that about me, you know, that really meant a lot. You know, because that's the guy who I look up to for my harp stuff. And when I started learning from him, I used to think he was mean because I'm like, can you show me how to play this? He's like, no, but I'll send you a link. I mean, a audio message to a voice message to learn how to play it. And so he'd send me the voice messages and he's like, just use your ear. So I used to think he was mean. But now I know that it was him helping me train my ear. And we talk about it.
And if you've never heard him talk about the old days, they didn't help each other back then. It was like they were cutting on each other, trying to whoop each other's butt and get them off the stage type of thing.
Right.
So things have changed quite a little bit, but man, what an opportunity to have an influence the likes of Billy Branch in your life. That's wonderful. And I'd like you to talk about some of your other biggest influences, Rel. David Lewis Myers, T-Bone Walker, Albert Collins, great musicians all, but the depth of your knowledge and your influence goes much further back, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, see, you know, I'm more than the blues guy. I love reggae as well, and jazz.
Right.
So
all
I
right.
take and African music. So I take a lot of influences from those cultures. But, you know, like Charlie Christian, you know, or like the Lonnie Johnsons who started bending, you know, on the guitar, Eddie Lang, you know, those guys, as well as like your Sly and Robbies and your Peter Tosh's and your Donald Kinsey's. Those guys were pivotal, very important to me to listen to as a guitarist. Whereas like with harmonica, you've got like Peter Hampton, who's a guy from England, who was a harmonica player. You had your Sonny Boy Williamson, number one. You had your Rice Miller, AKA Sonny Boy, number two.
Mm-hmm.
You had your Jay Bird Coleman's and, you know, Sonny Terry. Even Brownie McGhee as a guitar player and a singer, because he's a very underrated guitar player and singer. Those are the guys who I listened to and started forming my ears and shaping my sound off of, you know, and I'm still working to shape my sound off of, you know. Like I was hanging out with Jerry Portnoy during Spa, who played for Muddy Waters. And we were sitting down jamming.
Wow.
And he's like, your harp playing is great, but your guitar playing, you play what they call straight guitar. And don't nobody do that anymore, you know. And sometimes people are like, oh, I like your harp playing, but I like your guitar playing more, which is most of the time is an insult. I take that as an insult. But for Jerry to say, your harp playing is great, but your guitar playing is even better because doesn't nobody do it anymore, it meant so much to me because it means I'm doing something right when it comes to keeping, you know,
yes,
that style alive, you know. But that's not all that I do, but it's the main thing that I love to showcase, because it's something that, no, like he said, nobody does.
I have to tell you, I've been watching your videos. I see your videos regularly now because I follow you on Facebook, of course. And, you know, you see one or two videos of a guy playing the guitar and he's playing it a particular way. You're thinking, oh, it's kind of cool, you know. You don't let up on this. This is your style. Like you said, you're still forming your own sound, your own voice. And I think it's refreshing. Because I like a little rock with my blues. I like a little blues with my rock. I like a little country. I like the, you know, some of the swamp blues. I like a little bit of everything. Okay. But I really dig some of the old stuff, and it's nice to hear a young man like yourself that has embraced that sound and is forming his own sound around that. And I think it's very unique. And it's definitely something that I think is going to set you apart from people like Chris Stone Kingfish, Matthias Lateen, who, by the way, I saw a picture of you and him in the band and John Primer on your Facebook cover photo. Matthias is a great young musician, but I honestly think the blues is in fine shape because you kind of bring a balance to that by bringing some of that old school stuff. What do you think?
Well, I just do it because I love it. You know, I don't try to upstage nobody
understood. Yeah.
And I'm not a flashy guitar player or a harmonica player. You know, I just do it because it's what I feel. So anything you see, sure. If you see me out there playing rock, you see me playing it because I feel it.
Okay.
You know, I might say, oh, let's play a jazz tune. You know, it's all based off of how I'm feeling, you know. And so, and sometimes the guys might get mad at me sometimes when we're playing because I'm like, okay, we're not going to do this one. And I'll call something out that's like totally not on the list and that's like pretty, you know, technical song or something that we haven't went over together, you know, and it's like, but we haven't went over. I'm like, you'll catch it. So for me, it's all about feel, even when it comes to that. But yeah, I feel like invention is the tradition. And so when you invent something and when you take something and build around something that's already there, you kind of strengthen the foundation. And so for me to pull in the old stuff, you know, like the Charlie Pattons and the you know, different guys from the Delta, as well as your Chicago cats, you know, like your Eddie mm-hmm. Taylor, your Earl Hookers, to put that together. And then to even go a little later to your, you know, Luther Tuckers and those guys, for me, that's what I like. So I mix it all together and kind of put a my twist on it, a fresh, you know, twist on it. Shout out to Kingfish. Matthias.
There you go.
All right. Newest album. I played on one song.
You played on his newest album?
Yeah, I played on one song.
Nice. Very cool. And you know, that's the other thing I like about this new generation is they're carrying on that tradition of working together to do collaborative work. Ben Levin's another one that does a lot of that, very much in the same style as Bob Cortor, if you will. But I want to flip the page here, because when you and I last spoke, you were about to head across the pond to Norway for the Notodden Blues Festival, weren't you?
Yep.
And how did that go, and how were you received? I've been dying to find out.
Very well received. Great gigs. I think I played about 6 different little gigs over there. And
nice.
It was great. You know, people were great. The festival was amazing. It's probably my 4th time in Europe, and you know, I have to say, this and the one in the gig in Holland and in Belgium earlier this year, those were my favorite 3 gigs while over there. And of course, the Lucerne Blues Fest. But with these 3, you know, it was like there was just a feeling you got from the people, and the you know, you felt like you were really at home. It was like one big family, and you know, it was. Great gig.
Now, I've heard from several other blues musicians, and I want to get your take on this. Do you find that the Europeans generally have maybe a greater appreciation for the blues than we see in the United States to some degree?
To some degree, yes. Mm-hmm. You know, but I'll put it like this. A prophet is not, you know, welcomed in his own land until somebody else welcomes him somewhere else.
There you go. Ask Hendrix.
That was the case with Hendrix and a lot of your blues guys. They had to go over and then come back. But, you know, I think over here we're starting to gain a much greater appreciation for the music as we really start to dig into it. Because, you know, a lot of people, especially Black people, they don't like the music because of the background and what it reminds them of. And, you know, and sometimes it's, the music changed so much to where it's like disco came in and then hip hop came in. So everybody jumped on the bandwagon to something else. So now they're kind of looking back, just like everybody's wearing what was being worn back in the 70s. And they're acting like it's new, but really it's just something that they brought back and renamed, you know?
Yep. Now, I have to tell you, I absolutely love the photos that you posted from your trip with you as a veritable who's who of the Chicago blues scene. Frankly, everyone was over there. Bob Cortor, Bob Strozier, John Primer, the list goes on and on. What was that week like for you as an emerging 18-year-old blues musician, Raul? I mean, just in a nutshell, if you're able to encapsulate it.
It was, that's hard, but it was it was a great time. You know, and the highlight of my week was spending time with Kev Mo. He's, you know, we I was supposed to have the dressing room he had, but there was bad weather, and so they gave him my dressing room. And you know, he came upstairs, or actually he was walking down the stairs, and I was talking to Matthew, and I was like, "Oh, Kev Mo's here. I wish I could meet him." And I don't know if he heard me or not, but he turned around, came back up the stairs, and he's like, "I'm Kev Mo. Nice to meet you." And
Wow.
kind of talked for about an hour or two, and he handed me his guitar, and we were trading off the guitar. And he heard my story, and he told me some of his, and it was just such a beautiful moment. And then hanging out with John and, you know, Bob Strode and Bob Courtois, you know, I see those guys a lot, you know, but hanging out with them over there while they're on the road, you know, it's a totally different atmosphere, you know, it's a totally different thing, you know.
I saw the video clip of you sitting there with Keb and playing his guitar, and I don't know if you can see it, but I went to their to Tajmo over at Grand Rapids, and I took some photos of that concert back in June, and it was a wonderful show. But it's so cool to hear. Now, we just talked about the younger generation embracing you and buddying up with you, so to speak. But being able to sit there, and I know you weren't expecting this. At least I wouldn't think you'd be expecting to have that kind of time with Keb.
No, I wasn't.
And Matthew told me that Keb kept saying, I gotta go do this. But he wouldn't leave. He just sat there and kept visiting with you.
He said, I gotta go warm up my fingers, you know, because you know, as a guitar player, you have to sit there and warm up before you
Yeah.
the time. If not, you know, especially as you get older, if not, you're gonna be stiff and blah blah blah. So he kept saying he had to go, but he kept staying. It's like at one point And what came to my mind was, because I try to be considerate of people, I was like,
Well, sure.
don't you have to go in? But then I was like, well, he's still here. So, hey, let's spend some more time. So, but eventually,
So
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I have to ask you, Rel, what was going through your mind when he handed that guitar over to you?
I don't know. I was in shock. I'd put it like that. I was in shock.
It kind of makes you realize the level that you are. And understand something. I have already learned from you by talking to you today, by hearing what Matthew has said about you. You're a very humble young man. And but it still has to rise up in your mind and say, man, I got to be doing something right if Kev Mo's handing me his guitar, right?
Well, I mean, of course. I mean, that's always there, you know.
Yeah.
Because I mean, if you don't have the confidence in yourself, whether you're humble or not, to say, okay, I'm doing something right, this person's, you know, then are you really, you know, you got one thing, that's my thing, you gotta have confidence in yourself no matter what, you know.
Yes, sir.
And so that's always my thing. Oh, I must be doing something right. This man is. Or John Primer called me up on stage. He told me I'm doing it right. So that,
Woo! There you go, man. All right. So you're back home, back to reality. You're posting your videos as you have been. Rumor has it that you're also working on your debut album. Is that correct?
that's correct.
Any timeline for the release?
No, not yet, sadly.
Okay.
We're just basically working on, you know, a lot of the pre-production stuff now, and we're getting things situated, but pretty soon we'll have a time frame, and but we already know what's gonna be on there, and we know what's gonna. So yeah, some great stuff.
I have to tell you, I'm excited to hear it. When you get the album ready and you're able to share a digital copy so I can listen to it and review it, I would love to have you back on to talk about it. And what we'll do is we'll plan the release of that episode. We'll do a promotional episode and release it the week that the album comes out. How does that sound?
Sounds great to me.
How about gigs and touring? Anything happening in the coming weeks and months, Ro?
Yeah, so September 26th, I'm playing Rosa's Lounge in Chicago again. Then October 3rd, I'm playing the Kansas City Jazz and Blues Festival, or Kansas
Nice.
City Jazz Festival, which they're bringing back because I think they had discontinued it for a while, but now they're bringing it
Okay.
back. And so then after that, I'm playing the National Blues Museum on the 4th of October in St.
Wow.
And then we're going back down Chicago, and I'm going back home. And once I get home on October the 10th, I'm playing the King Biscuit Blues Festival
Again.
again on the main stage. Then after that, we're setting up something. My first gig in Nashville was at this place called Papa Turney's. And we're working on setting that up October 17th or 18th, works out. And so we're gonna have that. And then that's pretty much it for the year, I think, unless something else comes up.
All right, man. Here is your golden opportunity to tell people where they can learn more about you. And until they can get your album and your merch up there for sale, how to book you for a gig. So speaking of booking you for a gig, where do we send people?
My website is youngrell.com. That's youngrell.com. And on there, all my contact info is there. So, you can reach out to my manager, Matthew Scholar. I mean, you can reach out to me on Facebook and I'll send you his way if you have trouble finding that. I'm on Instagram as well as young_rail_official. And yeah, all my gigs are on the website as well. And all the press and whatnot.
Well, Young Rail, once again, it has been a genuine pleasure to talk to you today. You can bet I'm going to be following your career from this day forward. And anytime you have an album to promote or a tour to talk about or other big news, you always have a microphone here, my friend. And if you're going to be in Michigan, by all means, let me know. I'll come out. I'm a photographer. I'll come out and shoot some photos for you. And I'd also love to come out and support you. My appreciation. Thank you so much for joining us today on Time Signatures. So much appreciated. And that wraps up this edition of Time Signatures. Once again, my thanks to Young Ralph for showing up here today and being with us, but most of all, to you, for without you, none of this would be possible. Jim Irvin reminding you, keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues, one story at a time, that's my mission. Until next time, so long, everybody.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on cabs, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham. Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.